Well, two more days of early voting before Tuesday's municipal election. One of those looking to be reelected to another four-year term is Park City Council candidate Alex Butwinski. He joins me now in the studio. Good morning, Alex.
Morning, Leslie. Happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Happy Thanksgiving. No costume. Let's try. We'll go Halloween. Let's go instead with Halloween.
Did you see ours lined up against
the wall? Yeah. I did. Well, I saw the kids outside getting ready to get on the bus, too.
Perfect. Yeah. Well, let's talk first about how much money you've spent to try and get reelected.
Well, demonstrating that I'm fiscally responsible, I raised $2,900 and I spent $2,900, plus or minus a few bucks.
Okay, and your contributors?
I will say the largest contributor was, in fact, me. But they also are Stu Gross, Jim Barth, Jim and Nancy Barth, and the No Name Saloon.
Okay. Your ads in the paper show that you're kind of aligning yourself with mayor candidate Andy Bierman. You have your own three P's.
Yeah, you know, when I wrote that up, I thought afterwards as it ran the first time that it was coincidental. It truly was coincidental. But it kind of worked out that way as we went through setting up the ad with some help from friends. That's how it came up. So
those three P's are that you will continue to protect our open space?
Yes.
What does that mean?
Well, continues, you know, make sure that we continue to buy more open space, that we make sure that our contracts for monitoring the open space are kept up to date and renewed. So there's some ongoing maintenance things that have to be done as we take care of open space going forward.
Well, you act like you bought it. I bought it. Park City residents bought it. Council didn't buy it.
Well,
taxpayers.
I don't know that I was trying to imply that I bought it. I think the taxpayers did buy it, and I think I have a fiduciary responsibility in order to protect it. So it's the I part of it is as one of a group to approve that we continue to spend that money.
Yeah, with the Stone Ridge purchase, I think that emptied the bank account there. So would you like to see?
We now have the Resort City sales tax, which is going to generate approximately a third of its money. I think we're looking at $3 million a year. And we're looking at spending $1 million of that, plus or minus, towards open space. And if we don't spend the money in that given year, we'll use it for keep it in the bank to be able to buy cash. Or if a piece of property comes up that's worthwhile looking at, we can use that money to bond.
All right. So you don't need to come back to me and other taxpayers with another bond election for open space.
I think we still would come back with an election for people to understand which piece of property we're going to buy. That one, I have to say, I'm not sure which way that would go. But typically when we do a bond, it goes out for public approval, unless it's something like water, which is a mandatory. We got to do the water.
Yeah, but I mean, we've passed $10 and $20 million bonds for open space.
Yes.
You're saying we don't need to do that anymore because we've got the Resort City sales tax.
No, I'm saying we might have to do that. I'm not sure how the bond. It depends on how you structure the bond. I think if you have the money in the bank and you're going to use that as a dedicated source to pay for it, I don't think you have to go out. But our policy has been to go out and ask the people if that's still what they want to do. In a sense, when they voted for the Resort City sales tax, that was a promise we made that we would use the money only for three things and we would not use it for general fund operating expenses. And those three things were open space, Main Street improvements, and infrastructure improvements in Otis, which is basically Old Town.
All right. One of your second P is to preserve our quality of life. How do you do that?
Well, you make sure that we don't let growth or pretty much growth run rampant. We want the growth that we want, and I like to call it shaping growth, that we don't end up with some of the absurd notions that have been tossed around, like eight-story buildings in BOPA and condos on golf courses. I mean, that's just those were ideas that were thrown out to challenge people's comfort zone. I heard it said recently that, well, we don't need our comfort zone challenged, and I disagree. I think that that's how you produce a dialogue. That's how you get people thinking. And in a way, it gets them focused on the project. Because, you know, as you know, some few people show up for council meetings, so we don't get a lot of public input. So one way to get public input is to toss something out that gets people's attention.
Yeah, when we still, though, see the largest developments that Park City will likely ever see still ahead of us, how is it, though, that we preserve what we have?
Well, we get involved with a development partner. It's really not an us-them situation. It's all us, and we have to maintain a dialogue. We have to maintain good relations with developers, as we have to do with everybody, that it's better to have a dialogue about what you want than to have somebody come in with an absurd plan that you have to fight over every single element of what that plan might be.
4 years ago, we were talking about Treasure. Still have seen nothing on that. I guess for Chuck's sake here, you know, where do things stand? And I mean, what are we going to do?
That would be Chuck Klingenstein.
Right.
Well, he asked a good question. We are actively involved in getting close to a deal. You know, the city role is pretty much bringing the parties together, and we meet weekly. Not me personally, but we have a negotiating team that meets with the players. And as I said, they're close. Can't give you many details. I mean, I don't like to use the phrase backroom deals. This is being done in accordance with our normal policy when you're dealing in a real estate deal. When you go public, suddenly prices change, people's attitudes change, their thought on what the value is changes, and it just inhibits being able to make the best deal possible.
But it is all done behind closed doors, and it has been for the last 30 years, basically.
I can't speak to the last 30 years. I can tell you that in the last four that I've been on council, again, it's allowed under the state law. It would be incredibly foolish to take it public at any given point because you're going to affect the negotiations. And real estate or property is a legitimate thing that we can go into closed session for, and that's what we've been doing.
Yeah. So if we elect you then for another 4 years, what would be unacceptable to you as part of any Treasure negotiation?
Let me put it this way. I have a vision of what can happen in Creole Gulch, and that would be a small boutique-type hotel, 100 rooms or less. Half the density, maybe a little more, would be transferred out of there. The buildings would be limited in mass and scale, and we would have control over that. And I think it would be a valuable addition of bed base to Main Street that if we do it properly under those constraints, I think it'll be very good.
All right. So who do you think your constituency is?
Everybody. I think that I have demonstrated that I know what's going on in the community. I love it here. I am concerned about our future. And so I actually look at it that everybody in the community is one of my constituents.
All right. Park City Municipal was able to bypass a tax increase even during the worst recession during the 1930s. I think you'd probably like to take some of that credit. How were we able to do that? And because my guess is that maybe we're collecting too much taxes. We've got so much money just set aside that, you know, we were able just to kind of finagle our way through what was devastating to many communities across the country.
Well, for the last 4 years, we've been limited to how much money we could keep in our general fund reserve, and that was 18%. That's one of the items you can use to help you get over rough spots. Luckily for us, the state legislature is now allowing us to go to 25%, and we're moving towards that very slowly, very cautiously. I think I've said multiple times that we're very conservative both in our income projections and our expense projections. So in that context, we've been able to manage our money, so to speak, very well. At the same time, when we do have a surplus, when we had a surplus in prior years, we were able to put that money into a capital fund that enabled us to build things like the Mark, which we paid for in cash. We didn't have to borrow money to do. So it's a balance of how much money do you have, how much do you think you're going to get in, and how much money can you afford to spend. And I look at it much the same way I look at my own personal finances. And my contribution to this has been the champion, if you will, in the early days of our budgeting for outcomes process. That actually came up in a conversation at the budgeting session 3 years ago. It came up almost as a sidebar. It intrigued me. Talked to one of our budget guys about it on city tour 3 years ago. We went to Fort Collins and we sat with them and learned the details of it. They stress the point that, wow, you guys are interested in this now and you're not even in a severe financial situation. Most people go for budgeting for outcomes, which basically aligns your council's goals with what you can afford to spend and your levels of service. So it says, okay, number five priority for us might be a free bus system. Well, are we willing to continue to subsidize that so that our bus system remains free? So you make decisions based upon how much do you need something and how much do you want something and how much can you afford to pay?
Yeah, but I guess we never even heard about any cuts, staff cuts that were being made. I mean, we didn't have to scrimp anywhere.
Well, we did. We cut back in the planning and building departments.
Because there was no planning and building happening.
Well, that's true. But you do want to match your resources to what your needs are. So you go through and you look at an area where there isn't the work to be done, and you make staff adjustments. The other thing is, you know, you don't just like to make arbitrary cuts in any staffing area. You do if you forecast out what your needs are going to be going forward for the next 6 to 12 months, you might make a decision that it's better for me to keep a person who is knowledgeable, who understands their job, rather than let them go, let them find another job, and then have to replace them with someone of lesser knowledge or lesser skill set.
Yeah. Still, Park City has, I think, about the same amount of budget as Summit County. We have, like, the same size staff, and we're talking about a city budget for 6,500 full-time residents as opposed to, you know, 70,000 people in the county.
Well, as has been said by many of the other candidates, we're a small town, and we should run like a small town. Well, we don't really have that luxury. I mean, on any given day during the busy season, we could have 30,000 people here. And you have to prepare for that. We can maintain our sense of community and our small town feel because we are the people that we see each other when we're out and about. But at the same time, we have a lot of visitors, and they are our lifeblood in many ways. And so we have to have a fully trained, competent police force. We have to have an emergency management plan. And those are things that are critical to us. It's part of the experience visitors need. And it's money well invested.
Just wanted to point out something that you had said earlier, and that was that the city was able to pay cash for the remodeling of the Mark. We actually had to pay cash because a bond election wasn't approved.
The bond election that wasn't approved was... And this is my dim memory of 8 years ago, was a swimming pool, as I recall, was a rather contentious item. And I think that's my recollection. I know in the 4 years in the 4 years I was here, we did not have a bond election for the Mark. And as I said, the decision was made to go ahead with the Mark, and we did, and we paid cash. And I'm actually pretty proud of that.
You've also taken credit for some of the city's green initiatives, but let's take a look at the Mark and where we saw our energy costs go, you know, increased.
We have. The Mark being an example, we built a bigger building. We built a more energy efficient building. And ultimately, in the end, we air conditioned that building. That was a luxury that costs a lot of money. But in terms of the trade-offs, had we just air conditioned the existing Racquet Club facility, it would have been hugely more expensive. So at the end of the day, yes, the building is less green than – I don't know if green is the right way to put it. But yes, it uses more energy, has a bigger carbon footprint, but at the same time, it is a larger building. It does have more amenities. It is air-conditioned. And we could easily save green. We could become more green if we were willing to turn off the air conditioning. That would put us totally in the black if you had a green account.
All right. Wanted also to ask you about the RDA and the money that the city has committed to Park City Mountain Resort for a transit center and parking structure there at the base of the resort. You say, yeah, we go ahead with that. Given that we may not even have an operating resort there?
Well, if we don't have an operating resort there, that would be a different scenario. I remember we had to answer this question, yes or no, and I did say yes. My presumption answering that, there would be a resort there. Somebody would be running it, and we would need the parking facility. Obviously, if there was no resort, there would be no need for a 2,500-space parking facility, so we wouldn't build it. And by the way, the resort was going to contribute two-thirds of what that cost was going to be, and we were only in for a third. So if there was nobody contributing their portion, I'm pretty sure we would not be contributing ours.
Yeah. You've often talked about, you know, Park City kind of being a three-legged stool, you know, with Deer Valley, Park City, Mountain Resort, and Main Street. What about, is Vail Resort's low-price Epic Pass good for Park City business?
Well, the first thing I'd say is it's always flattering to have people pick up on something that you once said, which was 4 years ago I ran on the notion of the three-legged stool, so I'm pretty heartened by that. Everybody recognizes that. The Epic Pass is not going to have much of an effect on us per se. The county will be affected because all the sales tax for those tickets are collected in Broomfield, Colorado, where the tickets are sold out of for the canyons. As of right now, all our lift tickets that are here are paid for here, and the sales tax is collected here.
Yeah, but so having a low price pass, though, is that good? I mean, is it going to take away from Deer Valley, Park City, from our business here within city limits?
You know, I honestly don't know. It could. I think our expectation, based upon what we know, it won't, based upon limited casual conversations we've had with the resort owners. It shouldn't. Bookings are up. Pass sales are up. Bob Wheaton spoke yesterday. I think you were there at the conference up at Stein's. And he basically painted a rosy picture. And he's never been wrong before.
All right. Finally, Alex, why should people reelect you and put you into office for another 4 years?
Well, in 4 years, I've had successes. I like my job. I think I do it very well. I've built relationships that, for collaboration at the county and down at the state level, which I've spoken about many times as I've been out on knocking on doors. So basically, I'm asking for people's votes so I can carry on working for the community.
All right. Alex, thanks for coming by this morning.
Thanks, Leslie.
KPCW News Time now, 8:30.